B3. Number 1B.
All right, let's think about it from another standpoint and see if we get that clear. For instance, we know what science means. Last year, we have taken that nice definition of science, which says that science has the function of organizing the totality of experience into a coherent whole. That's one way of describing science. There are many ways, but this is a way of describing really science from the practical standpoint. That science is that which can organize the totality of experience. Therefore, experience is on every level of human experiments and human experience, and organize all those experiences into a coherent whole. You see, back to one coherent principle that unifies everything. So, usually in science, in ordinary science, we make the distinction between two classifications of science. First, one always presents in a university course, first the pure or abstract science, and it's called that way, pure science, abstract science, which is, so to say, theoretical science, even in mathematics. And second, after one has presented pure science, you always have courses then on practical or useful science, usually called applied science. So you have theoretical science and applied science as two ways of looking at the thing. One stresses the theory, the other stresses how that theory is made practical. Both are together. Both are inseparable. Though for the sake of understanding it better, we have a classification into two categories. The moment we say two categories, we shouldn't make the mistake of feeling that they are two separate sciences. Theoretical science, applied science. See, they are one, but looked at it from two different sides. It's like a coin that has two sides. It's still one coin. Yes. All right. Now, so if we understand pure science, it must be a knowledge that offers itself to application and to the application and solving of practical problems. And I said that really practice therefore means to see in a problem the theory. Not any theory, but the right theory. That's practice. I tried to show that in a very simple kindergarten-like way, but I think it's a very good example. I once read in the Reader's Digest, you know, you have there on the bottom of the page usually a little story and so on. And I read that little story one day and felt that's exactly what Christian Science do with their science. The story ran like this. It said that little Johnny went to school, I think first grade, and they had to learn arithmetic, the numeration table. And so the teacher began to teach them a little bit. And so one day she was asking little Johnny, now tell me, what are two bananas and two bananas? So Johnny didn't know and was thinking about it and said, I don't know. So he said, but Johnny, what are two bananas and another two bananas? And he was thinking about it and thinking about it, and she just said, I don't know. So the teacher said to Johnny, he said, but Johnny, you should know, because yesterday you knew that two fishes and two fishes are four fishes. So Johnny said, oh, you mean fishes. There's the depth of the whole thing. And that's what we do in Christian Science, that we learn some kind of theory, and we are perhaps taught some application of that theory. 2 times 2 is 4, so you can apply it to 2 times 2 fishes, and it's still 4 fishes. But if one does not see what is the theory and cannot think in an abstract way, and therefore abstract from fishes, and see the main thing are not the fishes, but the two and the two, and see that in an abstract way, then it is not practical. Even if we know that 2 fishes and 2 fishes are 4 fishes, but it's not practical, because we haven't seen that 2 and 2 is 4, and that fishes really is only the field of application. The moment we see the abstract theory, then the moment that is given, then it doesn't matter if there are 2 and 2 elephants, or if there are 2 and 2 trees, or if there are 2 and 2 cows, it just doesn't matter anymore. The practice is then, which little Johnny was not able to do, to see in a situation which was about bananas, and he was thinking about bananas and how wonderful it would be to eat them, he couldn't see the abstract theory behind it. And that's what happens so much in our subject, that we are involved in lot of statements and examples, and give me an example, and here is a fine experience symbolizing the example, and then we lose the theory and are, so to say, hypnotized by the practice and do not learn the theory in that way. So that can be seen all over the place. For instance, when John Dorley brought out his book on Christian Science practice, over 450 pages, I think it was, showing how he was practicing his theory, giving a lot of examples. And when students were reading that book, they were very impressed by that book. And you ask them now, what is really the pith of that book? They couldn't answer. They just said, well, I liked that case of healing ether, you know where he, and so on. Then they went on that banana business. Or someone else said, oh, I liked how he explained the feeding of the multitude. And then they go on that fish business. But I have never met somebody who said what was his theory in that book. See, that's a practical example here in our field. That they never said, yes, you see, his theory is just on one page there, round about to the beginning of page 90 or 100. There he gave the theory, and all the rest of it shows how to choose the right theory. They couldn't see that. See, that's the tragic of it. That's, therefore, people then come to us and they are, so to say, exposed to a new principle and interpretation of that principle. And the next thing they ask, they say, is it practical? Can you heal with that? See? Can you heal? They have always a sense there is somewhere a theory and somewhere is a practice. And is there a theory that is practical? Not knowing that every theory, if the theory is right, includes the method of practice. At the moment you understand the theory and therefore understand what is the science of it and see what are the practical implications of it, then at the same time we know that it is practical and that it is applicable. A theory always demands for laws. a theory will therefore put down the laws that apply to each theory. And we have to see that therefore the way of deduction is there is a principle, the one inclusive principle. That one inclusive principle is the principle for all various levels of experience. Therefore, there are various theories of that principle applicable to the various levels of consciousness. And that within every theory, we will have the defining laws of that theory. So that we can always use these laws in order to prove the theory. Just as the theory of gravitation has a law, that law is very strictly, narrowly defined through its various factors, and they constitute the law. The way these factors are related to each other constitute the law, and therefore through these laws we can prove the theory of gravitation. A theory of gravitation which is only one theory within the science of physics. And the same thing is true with Christian Science and therefore with the laws. And that now you can see how important that summer school 1973 was, you know, where we have taken the laws of being. I still feel that is the climax of the teaching of the recent years. And we left it there because we felt we have gone as far as we could, and now we have to really digest and consolidate our understanding before we go any further. But there too we could see that we went out from one principle. We could see that one principle operates on every level of science, and we could see that every level of science has its four aspects of where Christ, Christianity, and science, and therefore every aspect of that whole chart has its own laws, and we were defining those laws. Now, what is practice? Again, I come back to our definition of practice. Practice is therefore to be able to see in a practical situation which law is applicable in order to prove the theory. You can't take just any old law which you know and apply it to the situation that is confronting us. It's the other way around. The problem confronts us. That's given, so to say. And we have to find for the problem the right answer. Right means the right theory, and so practice is, can we see in a problem the right theory? Again, I tell you really a kindergarten-like story, but perhaps this is always the best to make it plausible. Say, a child goes to school and learns a little bit about arithmetic, knows how to add and to subtract and to multiply and to divide, just the groundwork of arithmetic, he knows that, has learned that in school as a theory, and when he comes home and is no more in school with that theory, he comes home and mother says to him, come on, here you have $10, hurry to the store and buy me a pound of sugar and 2 pounds of butter, huh? And a loaf of bread, and what do you have, a pint of milk, huh? And so he takes the $10 and runs off to the store, and he comes back with the change. And mother says, do you have the right change? And he says, yes. And so she could ask him, how did you calculate? You see, the problem was stated very clearly, what the mother said. But she didn't use any term like you add butter and you add the price of milk and the price of the loaf and the you'd add that. And then when you had it up that, then deduce that from the $10 and calculate how much you have left. She didn't say anything like that. She left it to the theoretical knowledge of the boy that something through the law of identity rings within him and says, oh yes, I have to add first and afterwards I have to subtract. He can, you see, he can take out of the vast theory and laws of arithmetic, he can take out those laws which are applicable to the case without that somebody tells him you have to add and afterwards to deduce. Well, it's as simple as that. But there is a great moral behind it, you see, that there is something in the consciousness, in a cultured consciousness, that can react automatically, if that consciousness cultured, can react automatically and scan his whole knowledge, his whole theoretical knowledge, and take out the right laws. He takes out addition and subtraction at the right point. This is a wonder by itself. Human science was never able to explain why this is possible. That a problem stated in other symbolism, so to say, finds an echo in the structured consciousness and can ring a bell just there where it has to ring the right bell. That's why in school we learn that over years and years. We have these little exercises in school. Anyway, we had it, I guess you have it too, that you have these little stories, and in that little story it is not said which laws you should apply. So, can you see what application is, practice is? Is not taking the law of addition first and say, I'm going to apply it. Didn't say that. There was a situation stated, and the practice was, where in my whole data bank is that which is the right answer, the right law, the right theory for that practical situation? Naturally, this is all built on the universal law of identity that exists in being, and therefore we have seen, I think a year or two ago, that we see in science, this is the same thing, that the structure of being is the same as the structure of understanding. That the structure of understanding is not something different than the structure of being. Can you remember when we did that about 2 years ago in the science column, Christianity as Science, the Science Order? There we began to see that the structure of understanding is the same structure as the structure of being. And on that law of identity, it is possible and natural that therefore that which happens in being at once rings the right bell, so to say, in the structure of our understanding, and therefore makes use of those theories and those laws which can solve the problem. Yes, that's what we can see as practice. Have I made that clear? That it is somehow the very opposite attitude than one has usually. That usually you have a problem, then either you say, I'm a practical man, I don't need a theory, or you have a problem, and then you take that theory which you know at that moment. But it may be the wrong theory. That's why in school, when you have these calculations, so many of the kids then calculate wrongly, and they don't get the best mark. You see? Because they haven't seen that that abstract theory rightly. If they would see the abstract theory rightly, they will be able to detect in a practical situation the right theory, the right law. Yes. All right. If that is settled, then we can go to another aspect of practice. And we investigate for ourselves first, say, four different big fields of practice. Why do I say that? Because we know, as far as we understand the textbook today, and see the one being as represented by the chart, as touching mainly four levels of experience. Each level of experience, therefore, has its theory applicable to that very level, and not to another level. If it would be applicable to another level, we wouldn't be able to differentiate at all. Differentiation is there that we can really see a great differentiation between fields of experience. So, starting really with the level of Christian Science, with this level here, just this level here, we can ask ourselves now, what kind of practice do we get here? Now, we know that the level of Christian Science is really that level of consciousness which takes into consideration the relationship between truth and error. Therefore, the practice here is that practice which is engaged, so to say, in handling erroneous situations. That's the practice on Christian Science. Therefore, we get here what? We get here really the healing practice, the saving practice, the curing practice. If we take all that into one connotation, it is the therapeutic practice of Christian Science. Again, what is it? It would be the practical application of truth to correct error. It's therefore a problem solving or a mistake resolving practice. It applies, therefore, it is that practice which deals, therefore, with the level of matter, of body, physical level, the physical experience, the psychic error, the mental, the humanly mental basis. Therefore, everything that is, so to say, below the level of truth, below the chart. What is the purpose of this practice? The purpose of this practice is actually not more than to bring, so to say, the normal state back to normality, to bring the state of things back to normality. You see, it's not a progressive practice. It is trying that which has gone lost, that which has become inharmonious, that which has fallen away from the spiritual, from the divine, from harmony, to bring it back to its original state. So it's a healing, saving, curing practice. And you can see that this is actually not a really big practice or progressive practice. It would therefore show that if Christian Science would only be built on this kind of practice, that Christian Science must stagnate, cannot go forward. And I wouldn't be surprised that because one has put so much accent on healing, physical healing, psychic healing, that the Christian Science movement couldn't go forward because they put the accent on stagnation. Bringing, so to say, an erroneous state back to the normality of what? Of mortal mind. You know that Mrs. Eddy says that healing is actually bringing a situation back to that which mortal minds considers to be normal. It's only quieting down mortal mind so that it can kick to the right and to the left. And so those Christian scientists who only think about Christian science in the way how does it heal and can it heal and how quickly does it heal are those who keep the whole movement really at the point of stagnation and frustration. We come to a second level, namely absolute Christian science. And in absolute Christian science, you know that absolute Christian science is primarily engaged in dealing with the belief that there can be something besides God. It deals with the belief that there can be error, with the belief that we can get sick, with the belief that we can have an accident, with the belief in death, with the belief about anything. It does not really touch or is not primarily engaged in correcting concrete error, but it's primarily engaged in touching latent error. So absolute Christian science actually is that right foot of the angel in the Apocalypse, that right foot that was standing on what? On the sea, on latent error. It was a right foot. The right is always stronger than the left. It needs actually more understanding. It needs more power, spiritual power, so to say, to handle latent error than it is to handle concrete error. The angel's left foot, the weaker foot, was standing on the earth on concrete error. So the practice of absolute Christian science, therefore, is the prophylactic, the preventive art of Christian science. The preventive. It's dealing with the possibility, with the general belief that something could go wrong, that we could lose our health, that we could have an accident, that we could be subject to lack. Here, a much vaster field of practices is opened up. Because the latent error is perhaps 10 times bigger than concrete error. We may go through life, through the whole life, practically never be properly sick, really sick, you know, or very seldom. But we go through life and therefore have to see that we are not under the influence of general beliefs, collective beliefs, subconscious beliefs, the collective unconscious, archetypal beliefs, that we are not subject to them. Because they are there, humanly speaking. Humanly speaking, mortal consciousness has that subconscious field where all the ancestral beliefs, the traditional beliefs, the hereditary beliefs are right there, where the archetypal beliefs work, where the universal beliefs work, and they are there, latent, and we never know when they spring into action, when they come up to the surface, you see, and suddenly are there and take us by surprise. So we need a practice that forestalls that these beliefs can come into existence, that they have effect on us. Yeah. So we make a break here for about 5 minutes or so.